Good morning. We're supposed to be talking about parenting, right? Just in case you've ever wondered what the best wife in the world looks like, I thought I'd show you my wife. Oh, there she is. Yep. She's the awesome one. Is she here? No points for that one. Man. No, I'm just kidding you. she knows. All right, how to counsel parents in disciplining their children. So I'm not talking to you as if you are the parent right now. I'm talking to you as if you're the counselor who's counseling the parents. So some of my stories are going to be very familiar to you. If you're a part of North Creek, you will have heard them. And actually, if you're part of North Creek and you've taken our parenting classes, I would say you should go do one of the other classes because it's going to be very, very familiar. Unless you need a refresher. So the rest of it will be the same. There's only so much truth that you get out of the Bible on this stuff. Let me pray as we get started. Father, having kids is very difficult. They are difficult to manage. They are creative in their sin, and it demands creativity on us as parents trying to do that, and then we're counselors trying to help people with that creativity and that discipline. So I pray that as we talk this morning, that this will encourage those that are counseling people through this process and give them good, helpful tools to help them just know how to better discipline their kids. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, they are creative, aren't they, these kids? Wow, the things that they can come up with. Now, first of all, so when you talk to parents about counseling, disciplining their kids, some parents actually might need some convincing that you need to discipline. It's not coming out all over the world. Not everybody believes that you need to discipline your kids. Scripture is very clear on it, but if you don't know the Scripture, you may not realize it. So Proverbs 5:23, he will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray. And Proverbs 6:23, for the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching is light, and reproves are disciplines, and are the way of life. I've told this story before in North Creek, but a lot of you are not, and hopefully none of you are from North Creek for this session, but I tell this every year because it's a pretty incredible story. My house is right up here, and we have this weird driveway. You can go from one street up a side street, go through our driveway, and get to the other street. But to do that, you got to make some sharp turns, and we've got a big island up there with a retaining wall, and it's clearly our property, and you're clearly not supposed to drive through our property, but we're right behind Northgate High School, and a lot of the kids will drive up the side, and it's a quick exit to go through our property and head out on, and it's just a faster exit. So I remember one day I was out in the front of our yard, and we're chatting with somebody, and we look over, and here comes a car coming up through our little driveway, and they look over, the kid sees us and freaks out. And he hits the gas instead of the brake pedal. It hits the gas, and the car slams into our retaining wall, busts a post, which is going to cost some money to fix. So I walked over there. He was like 16 years old. I walked over there, and I've been to that movie, and I had an accident when I was 16 too. And I just, hey, don't worry about it. It's all right. Just give me your number. I'll call your dad, and your dad I can work something out. And by the way, tell your friends not to come through our driveway. All right, so he gives me his name, his number. And that afternoon, I called up his dad and told him what had happened. And I said, what do you want to do about it? How do you want to handle it? And his dad was like, handle what? Like, well, it's probably going to cost, I don't know, $250 to fix. How do you want to handle it? He can work it off, or you can just cut a check. What do you want to do? And he's like, well, I don't plan on doing anything. Really? You're not going to do anything that would cause your son to be more thoughtful about what he's doing. You're not going to. There's no discipline for him. Nope, nothing. Okay, so fast forward a couple of years. Not even a couple of years. The street when you come out of the church here, this is Ignacio Valley this way. You're going to come out of the light. You're going to turn left on Ignacio. Turn right on Bancroft. So now you're going north. You go past. There's a Black Bear Diner and a Panera. CVS, Safeway, you go past that, and you're going towards the BART tracks, which go over Bancroft. and you go underneath those tracks, and then there's a house on the corner, on the right corner, and it has a quarter wall, a rounded wall on it. Well, that wall wasn't always there. It used to be just bare open to the street. Except one night, two young guys decided they'd do a little drag racing. They did a little drag race, and I don't know exactly what happened, but one of them spun off to the side, went over the curb, smashed right into the house. And the kid that smashed into the house, he died. That was the kid that didn't pay for our yard problem. He will die for lack of instruction. That's really sad, don't you think? Really, people will actually die? Yeah. And not everybody believes you need to discipline your kids. I've had numerous people tell me, no, just let them go. They'll figure it out on their own. Okay, yeah, they'll figure it out on their own. They'll figure something else out, but whatever. Okay. Proverbs 22:15 tells us, you hate your kids if you don't, and love them if you do. He who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him gently. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. Your discipline may remove from him where he would go if you did nothing about it. You'll help him keep his flesh from ruling his life, and he'll become more wise in the whole process. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. The rod and reproof give wisdom. It'll make him wiser. In Hebrews 12:10-11, for they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best, but to them, but he disciplines us for our good so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. So folks, you may feel like you don't need to be taught and encouraged to discipline people. Not everybody that you know believes that. And in the world we're growing up in more and more, I don't think people really believe in the importance of disciplining your children. These are some passages that might just be helpful to have. I just have them in you got them in your notes. And if you got somebody who's not sure about it, show it to them. Give that to them. See what they want to do with it. I think you can give that to the parents ahead of time. Say you're talking to a couple, you get to know a couple, you had your first session, you can kind of sniff out there's not much discipline going in the home, and you can maybe sniff out that one of the parents is not really, we never did that in our home when I grew up and I turned out fine. You might be able to sniff that out, and if you do, one of your homework assignments can be read these passages and then meditate on them during the week, and then next week let's come back together and let's talk about it. Let the word do the work. I mean, my story is a good story. It's a terrible story, but it really illustrates the point. But the story itself is not going to change a person. It's just another story. The scripture is what will change people. Give them the scriptures, let them come back, and let's see what they think now. Number two, second, I got 10 points for you to come to this morning. Let's see what happens here. The importance of bearing fruit in the process is most important, or very important, let's put it that way. Being a fruit bearer in the relationship. Paul said to follow my example. Follow my example. He could say that because he had an example to follow. Philippians 3:17 says, brethren, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern you have in us. There are a lot of good people to follow. 1 Corinthians 11:1, be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. All right, some people need to be reminded of these things. When I say be a good a fruit bearer, let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. I'm talking about being loving and joyful and peaceful and patient and kind and self-controlled. I'm talking about the fruit that the Spirit produces in your life. When you're disciplining your children, disciplining in anger is out. Parents need to know that. How many of you are parents? Okay, keep your hands up for a second. How many of you disciplined at least one time your child while you were angry? I saw a couple hands go down. All right, so we all learned a lesson, I hope, by that. And if we could do it all over again, I hope that all of us would not discipline when we're angry, put the anger away, and then go discipline your children. Discipline will be received much better and it is the example of Christ. It's God's example in our life, the perfect example. So if you're going to discipline your child, then at the same time you need to be loving and joyful and peaceful. Peaceful while you're disciplining. If you're not, I just would tell you, you're just not ready to be the one doing the disciplining as of yet. Maybe someday, but not right then and there. I'll skip past that. So, I think a good question to ask your counselees is ask them what fruit they need to work on. So of all the fruit that's given there, it's not an exclusive list or an all-inclusive list. It's a good list. But of that list, loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, kind, self-controlled, which one of those do you think you guys need to work on? If you're going to discipline your kids to work on something, maybe you should also be working on something as well. And it's a great assignment. I want you guys to talk about it at home. Read the passage, look it over, come back to me next week. Tell me, you've talked about it now, what's the one or two things in that list that you know you need to be better at? You know, so many times parents come in and they got troubled kids. Sometimes all of them are troubled. Sometimes there's just one of them. There's all kinds. And they want to bring the kids in and they want us to counsel the kids. Okay, well, we'll do some of that, but not very much in terms of the younger you go, the less we do. We leave that for the youth pastors, the high school, junior high, and the parents to do. We don't prefer to counsel the kids because the kids are not usually the whole part of the problem. It's the parents that need the work. Because often you start talking to the kids, you start finding out things about the parents. You know, just work with the parents. You can work with the kids too, but you really need to work with the parents. Not every problem is solved because the parents are you know, bearing good fruit in that way. Not every problem is solved. But a lot more problems are solved, and there's less problems when they're actually being Christ-like. So I think that's a great homework assignment for you to have. Remember, that is my goal for this morning, is not to help you be a better parent, but a better counselor of people that are trying to be better parents. Okay, to be loving is the most important thing you can do. While you're disciplining somebody, you need to be loving. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I don't remember if I put this in the actual notes or up on the screen or not. No, it's backwards. Yeah, it is up there, right? Okay, so I'll read it with you. If I speak with the tongues of men and angels and do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. Just read that as a parent. Have I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal? If I have the gift of prophecy, you know, I can speak the word into a person's life, right? And I know all the mysteries and all knowledge, if I have all faith, so as to remove mountains, if that was even possible, right? But do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Hey, I serve at church. Hey, I'm an elder at church. I'm a deacon. I've been at that church for 30 years. I'm there on Wednesday. I'm there on Sunday. What did Rob say? I was there five times a week. Big deal. If you don't have love for your child, you got nothing going. How many are familiar with the name Bill Gothard? Still a fair number of you. This was an interesting statement, I think, that he made. I didn't put it up there. Okay. Is it there? Oh, there it is. Rules without relationship breeds rebellion. Heavy on the rules, low on the relationship, you got a problem. Heavy on the relationship, you got no rules, you got a problem. Can you find the balance? Find a balance somewhere in there, it's there. Overly permissive or overly authoritarian is going to breed problems. Aim for closeness and a moderate and focused set of rules. If all your rules are oriented around things that God doesn't really care about, you're going to have problems. If it's all about how the bed is made, and whether the room is cleaned the way you like the room cleaned, or they put the toothpaste away, or if they did the dishes. If it's all about that, I don't mean like it's never about that. I mean, if you're constantly harping on them about things that God didn't really make a big deal out of, when you do have things that are a big deal, they've already tuned you out. Because you constantly harp on them about stuff that doesn't really matter. all that much. Not that they're not important and helpful in life. And is it helpful to be organized? Absolutely. Are you going to die if you're not organized? No. Can people get more organized later in life? Yes, they can. Would it be better if they learned it at home? Yes. Okay, but the more important things are that they learn to follow Christ, they want to follow Christ, that they want to be obedient. So if you're so heavy on all those other things that are not really biblical issues, I think you're going to have trouble when you do have a biblical issue problem. But I'd encourage you to just have a nice focused set of things that you're dealing with. All right, never in anger, as I mentioned that. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Ephesians 4:31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice. You can never discipline. It's never okay to discipline in anger, you guys. Never okay. You need to put it all off. These are some ways that anger is sometimes manifested in a parenting relationship. Quitting. Hey, it doesn't work anyways. I'm done. I've tried it. I give up. That's more a sign of anger. Comparing. You know, if you were just like your brother, we wouldn't be here in your room and me having to give you a spanking or another timeout or take away another toy or keep you from a party or blah, blah, blah. You know, if you were more like your brother, that's not coming from a loving heart. That's coming from an angry heart. Favoring one child over the other. Constant criticism, writing them on every little thing, overemphasizing things you don't need to emphasize, underemphasizing God, spouse, neighbor, marital disharmony. If there's anger between mom and dad, that's very likely going to leak out onto the kids. So one thing you can do in your counseling is to evaluate these two things. Evaluate the rules. Evaluate your rules. How many of them are really the kinds of things that you want to put forward, and evaluate the anger issue. This is a good question for you. Ask your counselees, which one of you is more prone to anger of the two? You'll probably already know as the counselor, and they'll probably already know as well. Most people know themselves at that point. But ask that question, and then that can open the door to dealing with the problem of anger. I mean, they may have come in because they got kids that are troubled and hard to deal with, right? And then now here you are, you're not dealing with their problem child, you're dealing with them. But that is usually how it goes. That's just how it goes. You're not going to ignore the kid, you know, and the problem that exists, but sometimes the better avenue is dealing with the parent first and then see if the kid's still a problem. I find that principle to be very true in marriages. You deal with a husband and see how the wife responds. So the wife almost always responds. Fifthly is with compassion. Compassion. Always with compassion. Well, what do you do if in the moment you're not feeling very compassionate? You can find another moment, right? Does it have to be done right then? Well, maybe sometimes it does, but if it has to be done in the moment, do you have to be the one to do it in the moment? And if you're like really mad, are you sure it really needs to be done right in the moment? It cannot be handled later. Maybe you could present a situation where that's true. You'd probably come up with something, but generally speaking, it probably doesn't need to be dealt with in that moment. And you're better off, you know, send them to their room and come back at it later. When you're at a better place, maybe you'll have a chance to talk to your spouse. Maybe there's other things going on that you didn't know that might help you know how to deal with the situation that's right in front of you. To be compassionate. Ephesians 4:31 says to let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you. Let all that stuff be put away and be kind and tenderhearted and forgiving. Tenderhearted, that's the word compassionate. Tender towards the child. It is God's kindness that led you to repentance, right? It is the kindness of God that led you to repentance. Can it not be the kindness of you as a parent that can lead your child to repentance? Can it not be the kindness of you as a spouse that can lead your spouse to repentance? Your anger will not do that, right? James chapter 1 says that. The anger of man accomplishes nothing. Nothing. So if you're mad at your child, what are you going to accomplish? Nothing. So knock it off. That's what you need to talk to them about. They need the parents, since almost all of us have been parents or are and have them at home, you all know. They give you a lot of cause for anger. They do a lot of dumb things, don't they? Man, oh man. Okay, well, you don't have to complicate their dumb things with your dumb things. So try to be compassionate with your kids as often as you can. And if you're not feeling it, then maybe you need to come at it later. Number 6. This comes from Lou Priolo. I like this. Teaching always comes before training and discipline. Teaching always comes before training and discipline. Training is helping someone to do, which always comes after teaching, which is helping someone know what to do. There's helping someone to do something, and then there's helping them to know what it is to do. So I coached basketball for 21 years over at Berean. Well, sorry about that. How did I get over there? Okay, sorry about that. I learned a lot about parenting actually from being a coach. No life lessons on, you know, while I was coaching on it, but I just learned about the way people respond, the way they respond to a coach, a coach's voice, a coach's voice inflections, our facial expressions, the things that we do before practice, the things that we do after practice, the relationship that we have with them that goes on during the week and during the year, not just during the 3.5 months that you're playing a sport. I learned a lot of things about parenting from that. One of the things I learned is that most kids, when they come into Berean, they come from a dozen or more other K-8 Christian schools and some other public schools as well. They come in from all over the place. And when they come in to play basketball at the school, they've come from these smaller schools where they're like the big man on campus. You know, they know their stuff, and they were the best player on their team. So let's say you have 12 schools that feed into Berean, and then you got a kid at each one of those schools that was the best player, and now he's come together with the other 12 best players from each of those teams, and he doesn't look like the best player anymore. And they all come in and they think they know everything. It's amazing to me how a ninth grader can think he knows everything about the game. So we'd have a very frank discussion at the very beginning and just let them know, have seen all of you play, and you know this much about basketball. You know almost nothing about the game. Most of them are humble enough and they get up, but some of them look at you like, well, you have not seen me play then. It's hilarious. We have good conversations about that. And so what I learned was they just need to be like brought to a certain level where they're humble, where they could be teachable. And then it's just going to teach them the game. And teach them all the little intricate things that go on in a basketball game that if you watch the Warriors play, you probably won't even notice little things that go on, the position of the feet, the position of the hands, the way the head is on a swivel, where they are when the ball's on one side of the court versus the other side of the court. There are lines on a basketball court. At the college level, and especially at the high school level, you will see players when they're away from the other side of the floor from where the ball is. You'll see their feet straddle a line with a foot inside what's called the key and a foot that's outside. They're called line rules. Some people call them that. You know, that's what I did. There's certain ways that you stand with your butt out so that your back is straight, your hands are here, and you're like that. I mean, there's just a lot of little intricate things. And one of those things that you would teach players to do was when they're shooting a layup, they go off, if they're right-footed, they go off their left foot with their right hand. Because if you're going off like this, right, there's a player right here, and if you go off your right foot like this, then the ball is right here, and it's easy to get blocked. So you go up off your left leg, you shield the ball with your shoulder so they can't block your shot. Okay, so I had this one girl, Katie, who I'd known since second grade. I coached girls my last 3 years. 18 years of boys, I went to heaven and had girls. It was great. I had 24 daughters. It was really weird going from the boys' game where the ball's played in the air to the girls' game where the ball's played on the ground. It's weird. They don't jump a lot. They just sort of like, they jump like I do now. Credit card test. That's it. Anyways, Katie was a great kid. She would just basically run through a wall if I wanted her to. She's very obedient, lovely girl. Most of the girls are actually like that, by the way. If they just feel loved, they'll do anything. That's a good life lesson on women. If they feel loved, they'll do whatever. Well, Katie was like that, but she had this one really bad habit. So you teach kids that are right-handed to shoot with their left hand so they can make a layup with their left hand. So again, you go off with your opposite foot, your right foot, with your left hand so you can't get your shot blocked. Well, Katie was really good about being able to move the ball and get to the place where she could shoot a layup, but she'd go off with her left hand, but with her left leg, she'd go like this. She'd go off-footed. And her shot would get blocked a lot. And I said, Katie, you need to go off your right foot. So I kept working with her and working with her, and she just was not picking it up. And it wasn't a heart issue, but I did teach her what to do, but she still was just not, she was not bending and making sure I'm going to do it. So I started doing a thing where, like, okay, Katie, next time you do that, I'm going to have you, we'll stop practice, you'll drop, do 5 push-ups. She hated push-ups. Life lesson and discipline right there. Sometimes you got to get them to do what they don't want to do, right? So 5 push-ups. That happened week after week. And sometimes she'd get it right, but most of the time she would still get it wrong. And eventually it started, you know, working where she was going off the right leg with her left hand. And okay, this is great. But every now and then she'd fall and boom, down we go, push-ups. All right. We get to a big game we played over in Lafayette. It's a holiday game. And we're playing... We're playing the number 3 ranked team in Northern California in our division. They were good. One of the girls got a full ride scholarship to Cal. She was that good. And 2 other girls played at college as well. They were both 6'2 and 6'3. Oh, boy, they were tall. And they were good. And they were way better than us. And I had 2 freshman girls that were going to be great players by their senior year, and they were. But they were freshmen. They're 14-year-old girls playing against these girls that are going to play college in 1 year. And they're a 3 ranked team. Anyways, we didn't really stand much of a chance, but we got started off really well, got on a big run, and made a bunch of threes. And we were up, I think, 16-3 in the first, like, 6 minutes. And the crowd was going nuts, and I could see the coach. It was a rookie coach, and I could see the coach over there, and she was pretty scared about what was going on because they're used to beating people pretty bad. So on my end of things as a coach, I know, well, they're eventually going to come back. Right? Well, we kept building on that lead until halftime, and then we talked about it. Okay, we come out of halftime, they're going to come full force at you. They're going to guard you all over the place. So you just need to be ready for the onslaught that's about to come. And so we were, but they started chipping away. They chipping away, chipping away. They got it down to, I think it was, they got it down to 1 with probably, it was less than a minute. I was down to 3 points. Less than a minute, we had the ball in our backcourt. They were coming at us really hard, and the ball started going out of bounds. It was really close to where I was, and one of our girls was going after the ball. In my peripheral, the ref was right here, and I'm about to call timeout because she's going to get to the ball on her way out of bounds. She's going to get it. I know what she's going to do. She's going to look up. She's going to look down court, and she's going to see Katie, the girl with the left-hand problem, near the basket, and this is all split-second stuff, right? I see her again. She's going to get the ball, and I'm thinking I'm either going to call a timeout so she doesn't throw the ball away, or I'm going to let the play out. Okay, so I went like this, and the ref was a good ref. He was looking at me like, you're going to call a timeout, because I really should have, but I didn't. I let it go, and the girl, she gets the ball on her way out of bounds. She sees Katie. She chucks it underneath the basket. And here comes Katie under the basket, okay, with less than a minute to go. She's got on the left side. She's going to have to shoot with her left hand. And that 6'3 girl that's going to play college the next year is standing right there. Oh, no. I so wanted to call timeout. But I didn't. And Katie went up off her right leg and made the bucket. Bam. And we won. That was a great victory for us to be the top 10, actually 3 ranked team in Northern California. That was a great win. And it was all on Katie. All that teaching, all that training, all the drilling, finally, it worked. And there's a lesson in that for us. There's a lesson for the parents, you know? You just keep doing that right thing with them. Do the right thing for the right reasons and in the right way. Over time, You just have to wait on the Lord. Oh, that's a phrase that's in the Bible, but we kind of don't like that, right? The waiting on the Lord. How long do I have to wait? I've been waiting long enough. You know, wait, hang in there. It may not work out that way, but sometimes it does. So I think a question for you to ask the parents is, who's the better trainer between the two of you? Who's the better teacher between the two of you? And how can you improve upon that? That kind of a question is going to help them evaluate themselves. And the one who needs to grow will see the need to grow. And then you can follow up with that. Okay, so let's say the husband is better at the training aspect. All right, so maybe how can she improve upon that? And put the two parents together. Have them talk about that during the week and come back with ideas of ways that they can improve upon either their teaching or their training aspect. One thing I have learned by watching my daughter parent my granddaughter Sierra is 3 years old now. Super sweet kid. She's you know, some people are energized by being alone, and some people are energized by being with a crowd. And Sierra is energized by being with a crowd. She loves to gather people and then entertain. She's really good at it. She's quite fun. But sometimes she'll say things and do things that she shouldn't say or do. And, you know, some kids, they kind of fall in love with the word no. They just want to say no. 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 Do you want more food? No. Do you want to go out and play? No. Just want to say no. They didn't even know what they're saying necessarily. You're three. She was saying no, but maybe she was around two. She learned how to do that. But, you know, it's not like the heart was coming out. It's just they're experimenting. Their brains aren't really even formed, you know? So just say the word just for fun. So I in my day, we were taught, most of you are close to my age, we were taught you got to win the battle. You remember that phrase? You got to win the battle. So we would make a big deal out of it and address the issue of saying no, that you can't say no. It's the wrong thing to say no. You should say this, and this is why, and deal with the behavioral aspect of it. And I've watched Chrissy just say, Sierra, do you want to try that a different way? And she'll go, yes. Like, really? She didn't make a federal case out of it. We were taught to make a big deal out of it. And she just, hey, do you want to try that, you know, a little different way? Or, you know what, Sierra, maybe you could say it this way. Maybe you could say it that way. And just these, a very kind, creative way of encouraging good behavior rather than pounding on the wrong. And I've watched that work with her really, really well. Everything doesn't have to turn into a big confrontation. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Okay, let me give you number seven. Specific goals with each child, and the child ought to know what you're aiming for. Specific goals with each child, and they ought to know. Here's some examples of specific ones. Rudeness, respect, kindness, obedience. What I encourage people to do is evaluate each child. Let's say you have three kids. Each child, you know something that they need to be working on. Talk about that as a couple, though. Let's come to an agreement as a couple that with child number one, he's really disrespectful towards his sister. And we want to address that. Child number two, I don't know, pick a problem, whatever it is. What's one other? Unkind to friends or the child that's disobedient, whatever. Just pick out some things that you need to work on with each individual child. Talk about that as a parent. And then talk to your children about that. And so their homework assignment is to have that conversation. If they're ready to have that conversation with their kids, talk to your kids about it. If you're not ready to zero down on that, you're not sure, maybe you have three or four or five with each kid. You probably could. All right. Maybe you need to come back together and sit down with counselor and let's talk about which ones we're going to address first. You're going to address all the issues with your kids eventually. But do you have to address all of them all at once? How would you like it if God did that with you? That's what I call the buckshot approach. Here comes all the bullets. You get hit from everywhere. Okay, which one do I work on? Or you can just zero in on one at a time or two at a time and tell a child, here we go. Here's the thing I want you to work on. And for the next several months, this is what we're aiming for. And then ask the child a week later or 2 weeks later if they remember what it was. Because children often forget, right? They're not always purposely forgetting. Do you always purposely forget? You just passively forget, right? Okay, well, sometimes they just forget. So remind them and find out. If I ask parents in the counseling session, do you know which issues your child, does your child know which ones you're working on with him? It's almost never yes. It's almost always, no, I don't think they would know that. Well, that's a problem. Wouldn't that be a problem in about every other walk of life? If we're not on the same page with what we're working on, then we're working with two different goals in mind. Child's working on having fun, and you're working on the problem with rudeness. And they don't even know it, right? They ought to know. And put it on a post-it note, put it on a 3x5 card, put it on whatever they got, somewhere where that's where they can see it, they're aware of it. Your discipline is centered around that. You're not slamming them for every little thing. You're really aiming at one or two specific issues in their life. So write them down and agree on them and see then later if they can tell you what those were. Number 8 is clear-cut guidelines. Clear-cut guidelines. It's helpful, I think, for any of us to know the penalty before we commit the crime. Do you agree on that? You know that if you don't wear your seatbelt, there's a penalty for that. I don't know, is it $281 or something like that? I don't know if it's changed or not, but you know there's a hefty fine to pay, and you kind of know what that penalty is. You know that if you get a second speeding ticket, that your insurance is going to go up. You know that if you get an excessive speed limit ticket, your insurance is probably going to go up. You know these things, most of them ahead of time. And it's helpful. It's just a natural impediment to getting in trouble and costing you money and all that kind of stuff. Having to go to traffic school. How many have been to traffic school? How many have been to traffic school more than once? You should not be driving. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. So there's 4 of you that have been to traffic school more than once, but there was about 20 of you that have been to traffic school one time. See, there's these natural impediments that God puts in there for us, and it's helpful, I think, for the kids to know ahead of time that, you know, if I do X, then I'm going to get Y. I know that. If my parents said, I'm working on the issue with you of rudeness, And my parents said, if you are rude to your sister again, then we're going to take away X, Y, and Z. And then I'm rude to my sister, and they take X, Y, and Z. I knew ahead of time that that was going to happen. There's a lot of good things that happen with that. It teaches your child to discipline himself. Instead of you always being the one that slaps things on them unexpectedly out of nowhere, right? It gives you credibility. Because when you don't have it all planned out and then something happens, you're likely to slam something on them that's over the top. And they can come back to you and say, well, how come I didn't know that? Or why didn't you tell me? And you're as a parent saying, well, I can't anticipate everything you do. Okay, that's true. You can't anticipate every sin that your child's going to commit. Okay, but you can anticipate some of them. You do know a lot of them. And it's just helpful for not only for them, it's helpful for you so that your emotions don't get the best of you and you get all riled up about something and slap on them, you're grounded for life, right? So you'll have more credibility. You'll just have it more well thought out than if you don't have it planned out. So this will help them discipline themselves. And you can ask the kids again. Ask the kids if they know what you're working on and if they know what the penalty is for what they're doing. Ask them. Tell this later, I think. So I had this one guy that played for me quite a long time ago now. He's actually here at North Creek. He's not here today, but he's around. He was a great player. He could score, but he didn't learn. He was tall at an early age, so he never really learned how to, what we call boxing out, how to rebound, how to keep another guy from getting the rebound. you know, when you're in eighth grade and you're already 6'1", you don't really have to worry about anybody jumping over you. You just jump up and it's your ball because everybody else is like, you know, 4 inches taller than you. So you don't really get trained necessarily. And that was what it was for him. And well, now when you get into high school and everybody's growing and the boys all grow so late. Girls are done freshman, sophomore year. They don't grow anymore after that. And most of them don't even grow after their freshman year. But the guys, you know, they got feet like this big, right? And they're 5'10". Like, okay, well, he's going to grow to more like 6'5", right? So all these other small kids are starting to grow and get taller. Well, now you've got to learn how to keep the guy that you're defending against, keep him away from the basket so you can get a rebound. We call that boxing out. Hit him, stick your butt in him, and then you go for the ball. Well, this guy didn't have a habit of doing that. So I needed to teach him how to do that, which we did. I needed to train him in practice, which we did. Over and over, every practice, we had rebounding drills. Every practice. And he would go through the motions and then get into a game and completely bail on it. And I looked over all the game film. I looked over I statted every game I ever coached for 21 years. Over and over again. And so I added something on a stat sheet. You have your normal offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, assists and points and steals and turnovers and all that. I added a new category called non-box outs. This is when you don't box out. So I watch every play and I watch every player to see if they stick their forearm in the guy's chest and they back into him, right? I watch all of them. And so I watched that a few games, and I came up with this. Okay, you know, so here's the deal. I'm watching some of you are not boxing out. So each time you don't box somebody out, the next day in practice, you're going to start by running what's called a line drill. Some people call it a liner. You run from the end, right under the basket, to the free throw line and back. Then you go to half court and back, all the way back. And then you go to the other free throw line and all the way back. And then you run all the way across court and then all the way back. That's a lot of running when you're practicing for 2 hours. And so however many times you don't box out in a game, you're going to run one for each one. All right, so some guys would run one or two. Some guys wouldn't run any. They never, because they hate running. And so they just always boxed out. And this one particular guy just did not get it. So at first, on Monday morning, after a Friday night game, Monday morning, he's got six to run. He's got seven to run. I had more sometimes, and he was not fixing it. So we started this right off the bat. Then we get to a tournament. In a tournament, you have 3 games on the weekend. You have no practices in between. So every game, if he has 6 or 7 times where he didn't box out, that's 6 or 7 line drills times 3 games, he could have 18, 19, 20 line drills to run. Well, unfortunately, he really did not learn and got to the tournament. And on Monday morning, he ran 39. 39. He ran for an hour. Line drills for an hour. Oh, my goodness. It was painful to watch. So many times I just wanted to say, okay, never mind. But I knew. He was just going to be stubborn. He still was not going to do it. And to be honest, throughout the year, he got better, but he actually never fixed it. And I've played with him since. He never fixed it. It never worked. Oh, it brings me to another point that I'll get to in a second here. You got to find out what works. But I'm going to hold off on that. Clear-cut guidelines help most people. They don't help everybody. Okay, they're going to help you. And they're going to help most of their kids, but not all of them. So help them to think through. Deuteronomy 28:29 has blessings and curses, right? That's following the pattern. We know most of the penalties. We know most of the blessings, or some of the blessings anyways. So many times I've heard kids say, I didn't know. If I knew, I wouldn't have, blah, blah, blah. Well, shame on me as a parent if I can't get ahead of that a little bit better. All right, number 9. This is the issue of comfort. Lamentations 3:32, for if he causes grief, then he will have compassion. It's a great passage. You should read the whole thing in its context. And then 2 Corinthians 1:3-4, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort for which we've been comforted with. Comfort the kids during the process. It's not fun. No one likes to be disciplined. It doesn't feel good to anyone. It's not enjoyable. So not only compassionate, guys, but comfort them in the process. I personally still remember when I was disciplined. My dad disciplined me when I was 5 years old. He spanked me. It's the only time I was ever spanked as a child. And I went over to a friend's house, and my dad said, "Don't leave this house. Stay here." He was supposed to be babysitting me. I don't know what he was off doing, but he sent me to that house with some friends. "Don't leave." Okay, well, my two friends that I was there with, we decided to go to the next-door neighbor's house. I'm five. I don't really think anything of it. Just ran over to the next-door neighbor's house. Well, my dad came over looking for me at the house he dropped me off at, and I wasn't there. And he got really mad because he was scared that something happened. So he went next door, you know, and there I was, and he brought me home. He spanked me, and then he gave me a bath. He put me in his bathrobe, and he watched TV with me. Okay, I'm 61 now. I still remember that story. It's 56 years ago. He never spanked me again. In fact, my dad was such a softy, he actually never really disciplined me again. He would yell, but he never actually did any form of discipline. He just hated the whole experience. I remember that and would encourage you to remember that when your kids are being disciplined, it's not fun. And give them some comfort in the process. Most of your kids actually want to do the right thing. Most of your counselees' kids probably really do want to do the right thing. And just help them along in that process. So since we're all comforted in different ways, the good question is to ask them, how can you comfort your child? What is most comforting to your child, your children? What helps them feel comforted by you? Have them come up with ways, report back to you what they've decided. All right, move to our last one, the time we have remaining. Number 10 is to find out what works. Kids are different. They're all different. And this I learned again also as a coach. I had these two kids, Ben and John. They're both Bens. That's right, the two Bens. Gosh, it's been a while. So most kids, if they're doing something wrong in the game and you want to have them fix something, usually most people don't like to run. So you just make them run. But there are some kids that actually like to run. So I learned this with these two guys, these two Bens. They were troublemakers. After they graduated high school, they continued to be troublemakers. So nothing ever fixed this. but it did fix something because I learned that you can't treat all kids the same because not all kids are the same. So I had the same kind of penalty things where you would run for not boxing out and all that stuff. And these kids would put them in their line drills and they'd be running and they would run and run and they never looked tired. And they would look at each other and they'd laugh while they were running. I hate running. I hate it. These two guys actually liked it. It was weird. I'd never run across two kids that liked running so much. So they weren't fixing the problem that I was addressing, and I noticed in practice while they're running now they're having so much fun, and I thought, well, that didn't work. I need to come up with something different. So I took away playing time. And guess what? I got some change. I did that before with some other guys. You just have to learn what works with your particular kids. They're not all the same. Some kids can take pain in ways that others can't. Spanking works for a lot of kids. It doesn't work for every kid. Some kids have a lead bottom. I remember this kid named Dennis when I in Youth for Christ when I was with Campus Life, and they had an electric chair. So it was a little stool. Some of you will have to remember the little stool, and I don't know how many volts the battery was, but it'd be underneath the stool, and they'd run a wire with a little tape on the top of it with the wire underneath it, and you'd sit on that thing on the wires which connected to the battery. You sit there and you'd have to tell some story and not go over 30 seconds but get as close as you can, and you'd compete with two other people, and whoever Whoever, if you went over, you got buzzed right away. If you're sitting there telling your story and you went over 30 seconds, bzz, bam, you come firing off that thing because it stung. I hated that thing. But if you were like, you got to 27 seconds and he got to 28 seconds, then the one that got to 27, he got buzzed. So somebody always got buzzed on one of these things. And there was this guy named Dennis where he was telling his story. He was sitting on the stool telling his story. 30 seconds, bzz, he's still telling a story. He feels nothing. What? I couldn't believe that. Well, some people, actually spanking does nothing. It doesn't bother them at all. So that is not going to help every kid. If that's what you're resorting to, that's not going to help every time. And if you're doing it while you're angry, you're actually sinning it against your child. You're going to cause other problems. If you're spanking and disciplining that way while you're angry, you have a problem that you need to fix. You got dual problems in that case. So find out what works for your particular child. A few North Creek people here have heard this story before, so I apologize. But we had to work hard with my son. He would start off with, he's probably like 2.5 or 3, I don't remember. We started giving him timeouts. So you give him like a 10-second timeout, you know, and he'd cry, you know, sit him in the corner, put him in his room, on his bed, no toys, and he'd cry bloody blue murder for 10 seconds, and then that'd be the end of his timeout, right? And then that would work. We'd get the desired behavior, and then 10-second timeouts wouldn't work anymore. So we'd have to go to 30-second timeouts. Oh, world's coming to an end. Sit in there, and then 30 seconds later, he's fine, and comes out, and everything is good, and behavior would change, and then he would revert. Like, okay, that didn't work, so we went to 5-minute timeouts. Oh! World's coming to an end, you know, every single time. And we kept ratcheting that up to where we got to an hour. Thinking that was, I mean, what else do you do? You got to come up with something. And we thought, well, you know, we'll just keep ratcheting it up and it would work and then it wouldn't work anymore. And so we tried other things that I don't even remember now. So you got to fast forward till he was probably around 11 or something like that. And maybe 12, but he loved Legos. And at this point, we were working specifically with him on the issue of respect with regards to his mom and his sister. And so I remember getting kind of like to the end of my rope with this, and Sue and I had decided this was going to be the thing we were going to work on. So I went into Mike's room, and we were not the kind of parent that make your kids clean their room every day, that sort of thing. So I went in the room, so there was Legos everywhere. There are little pieces, some things were put together, but man, there was Legos everywhere. So I walk in and sit down with him and just explain, look, we got to deal with this, the disrespect with you to your mom and you to your sister. This has got to go away. I wasn't mad. I was actually in a really good place. However, I didn't really have it planned out particularly well. All I knew was this needed to change. And I'm going to go in there, I'm going to tell him I'm going to take Legos from him because he loves Legos. So, you know, you got to give him something they don't want or take something they don't want to lose. So he loved Legos. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Legos. So I went in there and I said, so Mike, next time you're disrespectful to your mom or your sister, I'm going to come back in your room and I'm going to take 10 Legos. And so he goes, is Lego one piece, or is it when they're all put together? I was not ready for that question, and I didn't know how to answer it, so I said, I don't know. I'm just going to take 10 Legos of whatever I see, and I'm going to keep those for a while. And so I could see it in his mind. He's looking around his room. What's he doing when he's looking around? He's counting the Legos. That's right, he's counting the Legos, looking around. So I could tell, 10 Legos, that's not going to do it. So I said, this is now I'm on the fly. And this is not how you parent, but this is how I did on this one. I said, okay, so Mike, then when it happens again, I'm going to come back in the room, and I'm going to take not only 10, I'm going to take 20. So we're going to go exponential here. So first time I'm taking 10, then I'm going to come in and I'm going to take 20. So he's still looking around. He's counting how many he's got. And And I could tell, oh, man, I still don't have him. Okay, so Mike, and then if you do it a third time, I'm going to come in and I'm going to take 30. And I could see by the look in his eyes, I still didn't have him yet. Man. So I'm looking around the room too, like, okay, how many Legos does he have? And how many stuffed animals does he have? And how many do we have here? So I couldn't do the math that fast, but I realized, okay, I'm just going to keep going with this. So I said, Mike, we're going to keep doing that until I have all of your toys. And then after I have all of your toys, if you do it again, you are going to load them in the truck. And then we're going to go down to Goodwill, and you're going to unload them and give them away to Goodwill. He was mortified. And I had him. So poor Mike, you know, he old habits die hard at the age of 10. He did it. I took 10. He did it again. I took 20. He did it again. I took 30. And I was scared as a parent. I do not want to take all his toys and give them away. I don't care about the money. I just don't want to. I don't want to do this. But man, I'd already laid it down. Okay, now if I don't follow through, that's going to be a problem long term. So I got to follow through. So I got to having 60 of them in my closet. And then, praise the Lord, it stopped. And then I think it was, I don't know, it was at least a month. It was probably a lot longer than that. He came back to me and said, hey, do I ever get my toys back? Oh, Mike, I'm so sorry, I forgot. Oh, bad on me, right? So I gave him his toys back, and he was better. It's not that it ended everything that we ever worked on, you know, with him. He's human. But it is an example of finding out what works with each individual kid. They're not all the same. Chrissy didn't have Legos. She had My Little Pony and stuff like that. And actually, she didn't really do very many wrong things, so we didn't have to really worry about it and have to map it out and think about it and all that kind of stuff. Some kids are just more challenging than others. And so you are challenged as a parent then to figure out each individual child. Don't treat them the same because they're not the same. Treat them equally, but not the same. Find out what works. And make sure that you aim at the heart. This, to me, is really key, that last line in that whole thing. It's not the why. It's the why, not just the what. What works will get you some behavior change most of the time. But don't fool yourself into thinking you solved the problem just because you got him to clean his room or put his toys away or be kind and respectful or whatever. The question is not just what the child is doing, but why. From last night, Rob Green's talk, right? It's the why. What does the child love so much they're willing to sin to get it, or they sin if they don't? You as a parent have to help your children figure that out, right? So help your counselees think more about why than what, because most Christians are little behaviorists. They are. They're little behaviorists, running around correcting all the behavior and ignoring what's really going down in the heart of the child. And the child's heart, you know, whether you're 3 or 30, it's the same person. It's the same human in there. They have the same loves. They start very young. You see them in their first few years. You see those desires that rule. Help them figure that out. You'll do them a big favor. It may not solve all your problems as a parent, but it'll really help a lot.